What up, y'all? I'm Logan Marie Glitterbomb. Welcome to the Green Market Agoras podcast, where Reduce, Reuse, Recycle meets Agora Anarchy action. Before we get started, just a few housekeeping notes. Reminder, we are now on the Center for a Stateless Society podcast network, alongside Mutual Exchange Radio, The Enrages, and our Patreon-exclusive podcast, The Outgroup, which you can find me and several other of our writers and fellows sitting around and chatting and talking about current events. So go support us on Patreon if you want to check that out. And anyways, today's guest is a private detective, and we are going to talk a little bit about what they do and where they see the role of private detectives in a stateless society. So I would like to welcome Anne. How are you doing today, Anne?
I'm good. How are you doing, Logan?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for a living.
Gosh, okay. Well, I could go on for hours, but the important details are I spend most of my time making phone calls and talking with people. In particular, and honestly, most of the work for a private investigator, especially here in Florida, is personal injury and speaking with persons and who have seen a personal injury and determining what they had seen and were determining events surrounding something like that, because there's money in that in Florida, you know, finding persons that might have a dash cam footage of a semi plowing into a sedan, that sort of thing. Really wonderful stuff. And I am currently, until they take it away, licensed in Florida, a C license. And what happens is I am either a third-party contractor or directly employed by a large personal injury law firm that I won't name. And most of what I currently do is legwork for them determining how much of a settlement they can get for their client on the civil side of things. Most of it is not pursuing any criminal action. I rarely, if ever, specifically deal with finding out whether or not someone has committed a crime or determine, you know, the whereabouts of a felon. In fact, I'm not a mandatory reporter, so I've fairly often taken statements with persons who are, you know, wanted felons, what have you. I don't have to tell anybody where they are. I don't. There's no reason to do that. Nice. But most of it happens to be on the civil side. So most of my day is just determining things that happened and talking with people and generally convincing the person on the other end that I am worth them taking up their time to speak with me, even though I won't recompense them with anything. And I can't compel them to talk with me, so I just have to be very nice. And I suppose that's mostly what I do. What in particular did you want to get into first?
I just wanted to kind of give our audience a little background on you to start with, as far as your work, and then kind of get into more specifics about, you know, civil cases in general and kind of your role with the courts, the police, and the prison system. I mean, not so much the prison system, obviously, but do you ever, like, deal with police?
All the time, and you won't like to hear this, but to complete most of my jobs, I do have to talk with, in particular, we're in Florida, so I speak with FHP, that's Florida Highway Patrol, a lot. I have to. A lot of what I do involves making records requests, and a lot of these are public records requests, so anybody can do these. It's just, you know, just like a mechanic, you have to know where to hit the hammer and don't have to It's not in particular that they give you a special hammer to be a mechanic. The deal is, a lot of these requests are in Florida, it's Statute 119, but in general, for Freedom of Information Acts, there's a lot that Freedom of Information Act covers for the United States. I think it's like United States Code 552, Article 5, something like that. You can always make these requests yourself. I end up either talking with records technicians at various police departments or county sheriff's offices to determine whether or not they have certain records, or if we can get them. And the only things there that I would have access to that a layperson would not, I only have access to because I have the written and signed consent of the client involved, who in this case, you know, working with personal injury firms, they are looking for compensation. They need compensation, and they are represented by a barred attorney. And to get some of these documents, or to get some of these documents, if they're not for crash reports within 60 days, I have to work with the attorneys on getting just a statement that it's all right to get these documents. Otherwise, pretty much all of what I request out of these persons involved is just public knowledge. I mean, most of these incident reports you can get, as long as they're not being actively worked, you can just get by requesting if you know who's involved and have some information to request it, date, times, locations, all that. If you're not sure how to request these things, you can even, you know, how we have it set up now is you can call these agencies and make them work for you, and usually they'll get it done for free, because at least one thing we can get out of these agencies is they have to keep these records, and then they have to give it to us, because I don't know who lobbied for it, but they have to give it to us. So where I work with the police is usually bothering them, asking them what they've seen too, to see if they'll actually talk with me, making them give me records, just because that at least anybody has authority to do, and just, I suppose, being nice with them and seeing if they'll give me their notes that they don't usually give out. Sometimes it works. Usually they hate attorneys. Usually they hate detectives too, just because, you know, you're bothering them and you're not a cop and they think you're pretending to be a cop. So usually it's just me asking them questions, and sometimes they answer me. I wish I could, I wish I could make it sound better, but I do have to work with them. A lot of what I do is, you know, Florida's big for motor vehicle accidents, right? And there was some particular lobbying, I think it was either Morgan and Morgan or Farrah and Farrah that came in the 80s and started lobbying to get something to do with these motor vehicle accidents. I don't fully understand, and get civil cases changed, how insurance law works. I don't fully understand that, but that means motor vehicle accidents, slip and falls also for the same reason, are big money for personal injury attorneys in Florida, and it's really big in Florida as well. Don't fully understand why, but it's Florida. So a lot of what I do ends up just being talking with people who have seen something like that or have information regarding that, and then requesting the documents surrounding that. And that's sort of the extent of where it goes.
So, I mean, since you're mostly working with civil cases and accidents, do you end up working with the court system as well? How does your work play into a court system?
I do, usually. So, the deal with the motor vehicle accidents in particular, it's usually with motor vehicle accidents that this happens, is there tends to be, because of how everything is set up, not only is there a civil side of things, you and I get into a motor vehicle accident. I always say that, like, the technical term is motor vehicle accident. You and I get into a car accident, whatever, we hit each other. We can decide not to have our insurance go into it and pay out ourselves, or we can contact our insurances, assuming we are insured. Florida wants you to be insured. You're required to be insured if you're driving, whatever. Assuming we're insured, our insurance companies want to hear about it. we can admit that if we just want to deal with it ourselves. However, there's always a criminal side of things. You make a left-hand turn in front of me while I have a green and I hit you. We're friends, so I mean, that's what we can deal with it, whatever. Maybe we know a mechanic who can fix everything. Ah, but a cop saw this or somebody else reported it. Now we have to have a motor vehicle accident report, a crash report filled out. And what happens is, in this case, since you turned in front of me, you'll be filed for failure to yield. Even if I don't want you filed, too bad. You get, that's a criminal citation. So there are some records that I end up looking into because, this, in this case, state of Florida, is already looking into what happened and preparing documents and already requesting statements from witnesses that they can legally compel them to do and bring them into court. Not because they care about the persons involved, but because they want to make sure they can get the citation money for the crime that you have committed, the oh so terrible crime, which, you know, in some cases I understand. Yeah, absolutely. Get every DUI driver off the road, make sure they never touch a vehicle ever again. But in other cases, you know, they're just, you know, just another way for them to get their hand into your pocket.
Absolutely. So
that's why they have records that I end up looking into.
So, does your work ever interact with the prison system at all? I imagine not, considering.
Not too much. It only happens when either I have a witness who just so happens to be incarcerated, or the client is deemed at fault and the client is currently incarcerated. I've gone into, I think it's only twice that I've been into Duval County Jail just to talk with people, and it's just because, you know, circumstance has it. Usually there's not that much involvement.
So, how do you see private detectives playing a role in the current move to defund the police and kind of move away from the police as the solution to every little problem?
Sure. Well, for licensed private detectives, my understanding is the reason why that there are licenses at all for private detectives is at some point, you know, everything was a guild. Electricians are a guild. Plumbers were a guild. At some point, there was a lobbying to make sure there were standards to get in and be licensed to have, you know, to have you pay for getting classes done on how to be an investigator that costs $600, even though you can just teach yourself this and you don't need anything that involvement. So the fact that there's guildship happening means that the barrier to entry to be a detective, to be a licensed detective, is really just money. You can learn all of this stuff yourself. And if we're moving to a stateless society, the records that a private detective, at least in Florida, I can speak for, because I work out of Florida. Things are different in other states. Florida is very open with records. At least in Florida, the records that you have access to as a private detective, you only have access to because a third-party company basically bought up information either from, say, the DMV, a government agency, you know, or a private company like Singular Wireless, whatever, bought up their information, bought up Roadrunner's information. I'm agent. You know, that sort of thing. And the only reason why, you know, it's not that these companies are forced to not sell this data to any company that comes along. It's just they want to cover their ass and sell to somebody who's vetted. So if something happens, they can point to this company and say, look, I've got a vetted licensed private investigative agency that is insured for liability coverage of $300,000 to whatever, that sort of thing, just so they can, not my problem. But if that was gone, you wouldn't have access to anything that the average person wouldn't. So your role in a stateless society as far as a private detective wouldn't be anything other than just a person who will devote their time to going out of their way and doing research for people, who is patient, just because a lot of times it'll be either sitting in front of a computer or going through records for a while and trying to find connections, you know, maybe stalking people's Facebooks, assuming that there are still Facebooks, that sort of thing, stalking social media, looking at who talks to who, digging around for things that are basically, it's called open source intelligence. You know, if you look up open source intelligence, a lot of it's, you can, there's a big website, I think it's just called OSI, that shows you what you already have access to. And this is what you would be doing in the stateless society as a quote unquote private detective. You would just be the sort of person that would be a private detective, quote unquote, in a stateless society, is just the sort of person who knows how to talk to people, at least, you know, knows how to be nice to somebody, how to get them to offer their time, even though they're not getting anything out of it, to explain what they had seen and what they know about something, to help somebody out in the future, you know, that sort of thing. There wouldn't really be, you know, you don't get a special role in the stateless society. It's just like, it would be, what kind of person are you? Are you the kind of person who would be a detective? That sort of thing.
So, currently, I mean, why do we have police detectives and private detectives, and what are their differing roles? Like, why do we have the need for private detectives if we have police detectives?
Well, technically, you know, what the government would say was you don't need private detectives for anything. But the role of a police detective is doing the same thing as a private detective would do, but the difference between public and private is working for the government and working for the private sector, as in just another individual or company. So a public detective, I guess you could say, you know, a police detective, is, you know, doesn't care about a civil suit between you and Walmart because you slipped and fell and hurt yourself, you know, legitimately Walmart's fault. They care that, you know, you went out and stole from Walmart. They, you know, they go back and they check the security logs, and they, you know, go to your house because they get a, you know, they speak to the judge, they speak to the police, whatever, they get the, I don't fully understand that part, but they get a warrant signed for your arrest. They go out, maybe the detective specifically is the one that goes out and talks to people to determine, you know, I spoke to their mother, and their mother said that, you know, they don't know where they are, but then I saw a vehicle parked there that had this tag there, so I went out there, and I pulled out my badge, and I forced this person to talk with me because I'm a police officer, you know, I'm big motherfucker. So the deal there is they care about crimes committed against the state, essentially. It's not that you stole from Walmart, although technically it is because, you know, they're the actual government. It's not that you stole from Walmart. Technically, it's that you committed the crime of theft. And, oh, that's something that the government can stick its fingers into your wallet for, because, of course, you're going to find somebody for theft. Makes perfect sense. Or at least imprison you. So the deal is they care about different things, but they go about it approximately the same way. The deal is, they tend to have much, much, much more, like, I suppose, more grand, more vast resources at hand, and they can actually compel people to speak, typically. I mean, it goes in the reverse. A lot of people won't talk to cops for very good reason, but they can still haul you in if you don't speak with them. They have a good reason to at least detain you, I suppose. So where a private detective is concerned, perhaps you hire a private detective. Let's not go with the cheating wife. Everybody does that. Let's go with you hire a private detective because, you know, let's go with the stealing. You had something stolen from you, and you feel like, you know, that's an object of great value to you. Maybe it was your grandmother's amulet or something. It had magical powers. So you ask this private detective to find out who maybe would have stolen it. Maybe this person, this private detective, you know, just happens to know what to do in the situation as far as, well, you know, in the past, what I've done is I've talked to neighbors. Maybe they didn't think to talk to the neighbors. Oh, they thought to talk to the neighbors. Did they think to talk to, let's see, this was stolen on Thanksgiving evening. Did they think to talk to the relatives of the neighbors that were nearby? Because maybe they were visiting on Thanksgiving and one of them had somebody who has kleptomania and happened to slip in and steal something from their place. Yeah, that sort of thing. Like, it's just the sort of thing anybody can do, but you maybe only catch if you've been working in the field. Like, anybody could be a mechanic, but you're not going to be a mechanic unless you've worked on vehicles and you know, oh, this, see, I don't know anything. Oh, this person brought in a Toyota Prius and their taillights are malfunctioning. I happen to know that the Sparkus is having the dingle. I can't say, but essentially you have less resources and you can't force people to talk to you and you just have to go by your experience. That's basically it. The good thing is, by not having the crutch of being some asshole who just pounds on the door and says, tell me what you need to know, you have to learn to be nice to people and convince them to tell you things. And, you know, usually they come off giving you more information because they don't feel as restricted. It's not as formal. You know, when I take a statement with somebody, you know, and this is all, you know, for civil liability, I take a statement with somebody, I don't go, do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you, whatever. I gotta keep things very informal, and it's easier to keep things informal if you're not an officer of the state. So that's at least one advantage, I guess. They don't have to feel like they're dealing with the state when they talk to you. That's basically it, though. You just be informal. That's the one. You could flip it at the disadvantage, you could turn it to an advantage. That's basically all I can say as far as advantages could go. So does that kind of make sense as far as the difference between a police detective and a private detective as far as roles and what they can do? Does that
Absolutely.
Make any sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and it sounds like from a citizen's point of view, from an average citizen's point of view, there are so many advantages of private detectives over public detectives, as you put them. You know, in that they don't have the threat of force and the use of force behind them. You know, they, you know, like you said, inherently because of the job and because you don't have the threat of force, you end up being more civil with people. You end up getting better results because of that. Like, you know, you only get involved when people hire you. You know, you're not seeking shit out the same way other, you know, public detectives will. And it's just, it seems to be a system that is much more catered to the individual client's needs. Which, let's be real, one of the biggest flaws of our current justice system, aside from the fact that we have literal prison slavery, is it's not catered towards the individual needs of the people involved in the cases.
Correct.
Often we go with these cookie cutter solutions that do not address the needs of the survivors or the victims or the needs of the perpetrators. It really does not look at either, and it just does not work as a solution to most of these problems. So I don't know, it sounds like private detectives definitely offer a lot of solutions, and I like what you talked about with, in a stateless society, it more being about the people who are willing to just put in the effort, but at the same time, anybody who's willing to put in that effort could do it. As long as they have the patience and the research skills and the willingness to go out and talk to people and things like that, which is not everyone's cup of tea. So, you know, you'll definitely have people who are willing to specialize in that. But I just think that sort of, you know, open source intelligence, as you put it, as it exists now, like is a decent basis for that, and then just people's personal research skills from there. But that kind of decentralizes detective work in such a major way, which takes the authority and power away from our current system of, well, public detectives or police detectives.
In a way, I will say that that's not 100% true where it's currently set up. For instance, the only reason I get hired is because I can produce results as to who's at fault. And the only reason they care about results as to who's at fault, you know, in this situation is because they can sue, say, an insurance company. And in this case, you know, most big firms here don't care about suing a private individual. They just want to go after somebody's car insurance company or the general liability insurance of Walmart or big trucking company. And the only reason they care about that is because if they don't settle out of court, they'll sue them and they'll use the justice system. They'll file a civil suit and go through the motions of a trial. And then what they'll do is they'll go over my notes and then they'll basically do the same thing and they'll bring the witness in front of them and they'll cross-examine them and they'll make them sit in the booth outside of the courtroom for probably a day or two before they actually call them in because they move things around so much. The only reason I get hired currently is because there is a threat of a civil suit because there is an attorney involved. Basically, because the fact that having a bar license is licensed to legally extort the government, which is, you know, good and bad, I suppose. Personal injury is big money, so if you're working as a detective and you're working in personal injury, you're probably secured an income. So things would need to change a little bit as far as, I guess, how those results would go as far as how somebody would... How someone would get help if someone is injured to actually complete the circle there. But otherwise, entirely correct.
Yeah, I mean, we would definitely have to fill in the gaps. And, I mean, we're talking about creating an entirely new justice system in the long run.
Yes.
And, you know, there's the question of what will private detectives even look like in the long run in such a society. You know, and especially if we transition to a post-capitalist society and what that could look like too, versus like the more ANCAP private justice models that some advocate instead, you know.
Right.
Which... Yeah, private police and private detectives are two completely different things, in my opinion.
I hope so.
Very, very, very different. Y'all don't do policing. You just do investigative work. And I think that's important and will not cease in a stateless society. People always... you know, need to investigate things, and not everyone has the time to do it themselves, and people who specialize in that, you know, and we might have guilds and, you know, well, we will have certain guilds and unions and stuff like that within a stateless society that can act as, you know, authoritative bodies that can accredit, that can... you know, put their seal of approval on and give accreditation to various individuals and businesses in those fields. But, you know, then you'll have people who just do it unlicensed because they know how. And people trust them enough to go to them anyways, you know? Just like with mechanics and stuff, you'll have licensed mechanics now who... you know, who have different accreditations and stuff, but then you just have neighborhood mechanics who will fix their neighbor's cars. So, I think that will very much be the case with this field as well, from what I can tell. And I think there's a lot of cool potential to that. But one of the things that's concerning, and I wanted to ask about and address, was you mentioned earlier about like being able to purchase and go through phone records and things of that sort. What is the deal with that currently?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Sure.
Oh, okay, so the deal is, the phone records, the whole phone records deal is, or, you know, records in general of somebody's whereabouts, somebody's address, social security number, that sort of thing. The reason why I'm able to access, that's one thing you have access to, at least in Florida, as a private detective, that other people don't. And the reason why you have access to certain databases that have, say, for instance, I can run a $1.50 phone search and get your social security number, name, date of birth, all that, where you've lived for a while. The reason why I can run that search is not because a government agency entitled me to. The reason why is because the company, the private company that sells, that allows me access, if I pay them for that data, bought it up as, what do they usually say, aggregated data. They spend large amounts of money buying data from everybody, I assume. I mean, if you ever fill out a sweepstakes form and drop it in a little box, that'll end up in one of these aggregated data clusters somewhere. You know, if you get a loan for your car, if you get, get a credit card from Home Depot, if you sign up for phone service in your own name, if you know, that sort of thing, these records eventually get sold just because the companies that own them, we own the records, want to get additional money. Oh, yeah, like if you sign up for Facebook, I'm sure they sell that. Instagram will sell your phone number, I'm sure, and all that. You know, they have access to these sorts of things. They'll, I assume somewhere else they'll sell your voice data, but that's not what I get access to. What happens is they sell that, and my understanding, and I'm pretty sure this is correct, don't quote me on this, even though you're quoting me on this, the reason why they sell it to these companies that I get to buy it from is not because there's some special property of the company that is able to buy this aggregated data, except, you know, them having money. It's just because these companies that buy the data are licensed, you know, in the same way that I'm licensed as a private detective. I think they always have to be, in Florida, that's an A license to be an agency. You'd have to have an M license manager. I'm supposed to remember this offhand. But they are licensed and they are vetted by this in the same process that I have to be vetted. And because of that, the companies that sell them the data at least feel like they can cover their ass as far as they're okay to sell them this data instead of just some random person who offered them $100,000 for the data, which they still might do, but I'm sure they feel better about selling it to a vetted company who then says that they'll vet anybody who comes in to make sure they're also a detective, to make sure everything's copacetic, as, you know, sort of the guild process. Everybody knows that everybody involved has paid to get in. They paid the $600, $700, whatever barrier to entry, the classes, plus the $177 to file the forms to get in, plus the $100 for the examination, you know, that, all that to get in. Everybody knows that everybody's playing ball, so you get access. And the way to get around that, if you don't want to be on any of those lists, is you essentially have to not want to be found. What I'll say is, to start with, the persons I have the hardest time finding are the people who work for cash, they pay their rent in cash, or, you know, assuming they're renting, they don't sign up a phone plan in their name, they don't sign up to win the brand new 2022 Dodge Charger with their name and everything. They don't have a current vehicle, they don't have a private property in their name that they pay taxes on. Those people are the hardest for me to find, just because somebody who doesn't play by the rules of the system doesn't get their data held by the biggest players in the system. So if the biggest players don't have it, most likely the companies that buy it won't have it, and that means I don't get it. Typically, I only use a couple databases. There might be some that I'm missing, but at least the ones I get access to only really buy from the biggest and the best, is my understanding. They don't really always give out their sources, but if I'm getting your motor vehicle records for the past, your entire life in Florida, it's obvious that it was bought from either the DMV or you entering it somewhere else in a form somewhere, maybe on a lease, maybe somehow your lease agreement ended up getting sold, not 100% sure on that, maybe your rental company, maybe the PMC for your apartment sells your lease information. But eventually it'll end up in the hands of these companies that aggregate the data, so then I can pay $2 for a phone search, or whatever, the entirety of your being for $14. So you would have to not trip any flags, pay in cash, and then you would want to surround yourself by people who do the same thing, because if I can't find you, I will start to look for your relatives, and hopefully I'll find one of your relatives who's playing ball. If I can't find one of your relatives who's playing ball, I'll look social media, I'll see who's talking to who. If I find out that your mother has an aunt that's on Facebook, I'll look who your aunt is talking to. Maybe I'll talk to your aunt and see if I can sweet talk your aunt into telling me where you are, that sort of thing. So you have to, not only do you have to not fill out any of these forms and not sign up for anything, which is very, very difficult, of course, you have to surround yourself with like-minded people who are also not doing that to make yourself extremely hard to find. You don't have to make yourself perfectly impossible to find. You just have to make it hard enough for you to be found that either a private detective or the police will just give up because it's too much work.
Makes sense. And I mean, I'm sure there's, small things in addition to keeping your name off of contracts and leases, where you can't do that, like things like going with, more encrypted chats, things like that online and in those type of services over, bigger over, non-encrypted forms of communication like Facebook and shit like that over, using prepaid phones or services like Credo Mobile, which like don't really collect any metadata, like
Oh,
different
those are
things
really
like
good.
that. Like, just that's the type of things that people can do. And I mean, like you said, keep your name off of a lease, sublease, like keep your name off of vehicles, keep your name off of property, period.
You actually brought up a really good point. I actually forgot to mention that's a really good way to go about it. If you either buy, a phone from Walmart and not put in your name, just buy straight up the phone in the minutes, either from, like a random store. No, nobody's gonna bother looking into the unless you're wanted for terrorism, nobody's gonna look at the video, who's gonna subpoena the video data for you walking in and buying the phone. You either buy it from, one of these stores, a gas station, something, you buy it from a friend who just, somebody, buy it from a lot of people go into Metro PCS stores and buy, a sack full of phones and then sell them privately to people and buy it from one of those. When I look up one of those phones, all I get is something like Jacksonville, Florida. Like, oh, great. If I have that phone number and I reverse search it, the only data I'll get like is where the phone was sent to finally by the company that by the provider. I won't get barely any. If you don't use that to sign up for anything, the databases I use, at least, you won't get jack pretty much. I then have to look at all alternative routes. I just have to give up on the phone number pretty much.
Makes sense. So I mean, it's basically a matter of just not signing up for superfluous shit, being careful about what you put your name on, using encrypted services and buying, like buying burner phones, things like that. Like that sounds like something that can be difficult for some, depending, but also can be easier for others, and it's just a matter of finding out how much you yourself can incorporate of that into your daily life. It's that balance of convenience and privacy that you gotta figure out for yourself. As they say, privacy is dead. You can reclaim it. It's just hard as hell sometimes. And, we're doing our small part by recording this through Jitsi. So, remember, stay away from Zoom, y'all. Use Jitsi, Agora, those type of services when you can. And, I know school and work may force you to do Zoom sometimes, but you do what you can. Hey y'all, I just wanted to take a minute to remind our listeners that our friends at Brave Botanicals are offering a free ounce of kratom to first-time customers. So be sure to check out the link in the description, take advantage of that, and check out their wide selection of kratom, CBD, and natural health products while you're there. Now back to the show. So are there instances where people can turn to private detectives instead of getting the police involved for those looking to utilize the police, for those looking to limit their use of the police as much as possible?
I mean, that's sort of a weird question, just because what I'll say from my point of view is usually the police aren't going to do anything for you, and so if you want something done, you have to go to a private detective. What precisely do you mean as far, like, if you, I mean, you know how it is. If you get something stolen, you call the cops, they come over, they write a bunch of notes, they say, okay, we'll keep in touch, and they'll never get back with you. Like, if you want to find out what happened, you start asking around the neighborhood, see who saw what. This is stuff that the police aren't going to bother to do. What in particular would it be that you would be looking into a private detective for doing? Are you talking about like a missing child? Are you talking about like a cheating spouse, or talking about like somebody scraped your car?
Sounds like from what you're saying, there's really not a situation in which there's not too many situations in which police detectives are the people to go to over private detectives.
Actually, like, I will say there are sometimes when the police have access to data that you just don't have, that can talk to people that you can't. If the police do have an ongoing investigation, then you aren't allowed to talk to anybody or request any records involved. But if the police didn't have an ongoing investigation and they just didn't care, or if you just didn't report it and you want to do what the police would do rather than, you know, asking the police to do it. There are at least a few situations I can think of where you have a little bit of difficulty, but you'd be doing about the same thing. I think I can say that I have worked cases. I can't say what I'm currently working on. I can say that I've worked cases where I don't end up finding more data than the officer involved. Say, you know, these are serious cases, you know, DUI, fatality DUI, that sort of thing, hit and run, fatality DUI, looking for the DUI driver. I usually find about the same things that the officers do. It's just they have access to it before I do, and they have access to a few things that I don't. They can get it immediately, not much later. And furthermore, the fact that we currently don't live in a state society means the cops do have access to tools that are already planted by the government that I don't have. For instance, I don't have access to license plate reader data. You know, there's license plate readers sometimes in Florida, at least, along major roads. There's one off 207, for instance. There's one, you know, there's some everywhere. And I don't get access to that data, at least not that I'm aware of. Perhaps I can convince them through a carefully worded request to get it to me eventually, but I don't really have access to a lot of the things planted by the government. Just, you know, I don't have access to spy satellites. I don't have access to a police chopper. So before we were in a stateless society, while they still have these things planted and they still control the skies and control the roads and control everything, there are some records and some, you know, devices that I won't have access to, you know, or you as a private detective. But with some ingenuity, you can figure out about the same things without them, usually. So, yeah, I will say for most cases, there doesn't need to be police involvement, as long as you have someone who knows what they're doing, looking into everything. And for where we are currently, a private detective can't force them to do anything. You know, if you find a hit-and-run DUI driver who, you know, killed somebody you know, and you go to their house, you finally find them. I mean, you can't legally shoot them currently. You can't really citizens arrest them. There's not really much you can do at that point. You can say you found them and then let things work out themselves with the local justice system that isn't the police and let that work itself out. You can help them work it out if you like. It's just you don't have any special power.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I think arbitration services, things like that, would definitely play a role. And different community defense groups and restorative and transformative justice groups can fill in those gaps. So, I mean, what situations would you say that people should, in our current, in our current statist society, go to the police instead of private detectives? Because you said most situations you can go to private detectives and don't need police involved. But what type of situations would you say you should go to the police instead, even if you prefer stateless means?
Well, the situations you would go to the police for are situations where either you would need to have something... You would need to have something done that you can't do, which, you don't want to imprison somebody, but perhaps if there was a way to take somebody's license away, that's in that situation. But basically what you use the police for currently is if you're somebody who is playing ball in society and you want things done the way it is currently done, if you want to be compensated for an injury, if you were hit by a vehicle, if you want to be compensated for an injury, you can hire a private detective without going to an attorney, without going to a police officer, and you can track them down, or you can talk with them, and you can talk to witnesses, and you can determine that they have, in fact, violated the law and damaged your vehicle. But at some point, you're going to have to get the law involved because your insurance company, since we're currently in a statist society and the insurance companies have lobbied to be in control of everything, the insurance companies aren't going to budge without, they're not going to just budge because you, a private detective, have been hired by the owner of the vehicle that they are insuring and have gotten witness statements for them as adjusters. Your insurance agency might not move forward with it just because they don't want to pay out, and most likely the other insurance agency won't move forward with it just because there's no threat of subpoena, because there's no attorney, and if there's no crash report or anything, it's hard to prove that it really happened. They can, kind of move as slowly as possible on it and say, well, we have to vet these people and make sure they actually saw what happened. There's no crash report. You didn't even file a self-report afterwards. You didn't talk with the police at all. How can we know this really happened? So because you have to work with these basically private companies that have become the government, there are times when you have to use their dogs if you want things done their way. If you want things done your way, I suppose you don't have to. Particular instances... Yeah, the only particular instances where you would absolutely need a cop involved are if you have something of monetary value that you have insured in some way that you want, that you are playing ball with, like a business, or if you simply cannot find the information and it could only be done by somebody who could knock down doors.
Or if there's a dead body involved.
Pretty much, yeah, that too.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a very few select cases.
Pretty much, that's the thing. Pretty much everything else, not only do you not need a cop for, they won't help you anyway. It's not worth it for them.
So, how do people that wish to look into... private detective services, how do people vet private detectives, and, where can people look to find decent, reputable private detective services in their area?
Sure, that's actually fairly easy, because the private detective industry has a lot of people. The barrier to entry is fairly low. It's, you know, it just costs a little bit of money, a little bit as far as what constitutes money. I don't get paid much as far as what constitutes money in quote unquote real life. It doesn't, the barrier to entry is low as compared to, you know, your $200,000, classes to be a lawyer and the price, whatever it takes to pass the bar exam after you try it 200 times. The barrier to entry is low enough that there are a lot of people, and there are a lot of people advertising as much as possible. So if, I can only speak for Florida. Florida's big for private investigators, and if you just start looking up people, local search engine, I don't think anybody uses the phone book anymore. We used to. Word of mouth. If you call an attorney, sometimes if it's, you call a small attorney, sometimes they'll refer you if they're just a nice person. If you know if you know an attorney through a friend, they might have an investigator that they use sometimes. If you know an insurance adjuster, maybe they'll tell you a private investigator they use sometimes. You know, send them out for surveillance or something. Otherwise, you just go online, look around. I suppose drive around if you can find an office. You usually won't find an office for a private investigator. It's usually the work is small enough that it doesn't warrant an office. The only thing is, for at least in Florida, for you vetting a private detective, if you want to determine whether somebody, if you want to play by the rules and determine whether or not somebody actually is a licensed private detective, if that matters to you, you can actually just look up FDACS, you know, FDACS, Florida Department of Agriculture and something service, whatever. You can look up private investigative license, and you can look up their name and see whether or not they're licensed and see when their license expires and all that. That's all public information. The only other thing you might want to look at into, if you care, which you probably do care, is the private investigative industry is filled with ex-cops. It's huge for cops that got off the force and still want to play cop. So you will find a lot of, you know, people who don't even know how to be nice, who just have their license and want to, you know, rough somebody up. You can't really do that, but at least growl at somebody and ask for information again, just like the good old days. So you probably want to talk with them and at least get the vibe, oh, this guy looks like a cop, or I think she was definitely a cop, you know, that sort of thing. I think they really want to punch me. And you can just, and perhaps you can Google them, look at LinkedIn, maybe look at their Facebook to see if they are an ex-cop. Maybe,
You can
perhaps you can
also,
just ask them. Usually they'll just say, oh yeah, I was a cop.
yeah, that's what I was about to say. You could probably just ask them. Most would probably
Yeah.
brag about it, and
True.
you know, and for that type of job, they'd assume that you're asking that because that's
Yeah.
a positive for their resume.
Good point. See, that you're thinking like a detective. That's exactly right. You're soliciting information. You know, say exactly. You said it way better than I could have. You know, oh, were you a cop before? You know, or I guess were you a police officer? Oh yeah, I served. I know all of this stuff. I got buddies still in the force. Exactly. You said it. I might not have even thought of that about that immediately. You should be a detective.
Hey, I mean, from what I hear, it's pretty easy. Anybody could pretty much do it if they're just dedicated enough and willing to
Honestly, you
talk
wouldn't
to
even need
people.
dedication. To get the license, you don't need dedication. You just need to take the classes.
So, how do you become a private detective?
Good question. There are a couple ways to go about it if you know, want to go through, at least in Florida. I can only speak for Florida because I only work out of Florida. And although licenses sometimes can work in other states sometimes. That's only when states have agreements with each other and you're only working on a particular case in that other state. Licenses aren't really transferable between states. So what I say is only going to be about Florida. Hopefully that's all right. Private investigative, to be a private investigator in Florida, there's a couple ways you can go about it. One is you can basically get an internship. You'll be sponsored by another private investigator and you work under them for, I didn't go about it this way, I believe it's 2 years. And the person who is, you know, a vetted private investigator who has their license, who has an agency that you're working for, will be submitting, I believe it's biannual reports on how you're doing, and has to submit their final report on you and say you did well and you learned everything. So that's one way to go about it. There's a specific type of entry for your ABSC license in Florida, a particular way to enter just by, you know, having been They have to say that they intend to sponsor you in the 2 years before, and then you go through it and they submit their reports and say, oh, okay, finally it's done. You still have to get the application approved, but, you know, that it's pretty much done. The other way would be essentially applying because you can say that you have the experience from elsewhere and you've taken the test. I think you have to take the test no matter what, but the test is, I'll get into that in a moment. You can say you have experience in the field, say, working as an investigator with an insurance company, which you're allowed to do under, if you want to look at statute 319, no, three, yeah, it's, look into Florida state statute. Why do I forget Florida? I believe it's 319. As far as 391, I should remember that. As far as what you are allowed to do if you're not a private investigator and what functions you can act as that are basically private investigative functions that shouldn't be allowed except for the fact that you are working in this business. For instance, you can do a lot of private investigative functions without it being explicitly illegal and finable, which it actually is under Florida law because they lobbied for it. You can do a lot of these things if you're working for a company that allows you to do in the scope of employment. Like if you work for an insurance company, you'll probably be doing a lot of the same things I do, and you'll have a lot of access to a lot of the same databases. You won't be licensed. You don't have to be a licensed investigator, but you'll be doing the same thing because you are working for, say, an insurance company that is basically vetted in the same way and is doing the same thing. And then you can use that experience as far as allowing you to get the license, and they'll call your employer and determine whether or not you've done a good job and you've actually done that. I don't get to see that side of things, but they'll determine whether or not you've actually learned. And then you still have to take here, you still have to take the examination, which I, you know, I read through it so many times and I still can't remember the statute number. Is it 391? The statutes for what you need to know as a private investigator, which are just like, it's really just garbage. It's what you can be, what you're allowed to do and what you can be fined for. You know, you're not allowed to use a badge with a 5-pointed star because somebody will think you're a cop. You're not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to, where you can carry it. And a lot of it is, you even have to remember, I'm probably not even allowed to say this. You have to remember a lot of things that are specifically in the statutes regarding being licensed as a private investigator, as a security guard, and as a repo agent, because a lot of those fall into similar categories, and for some reason you need to know all of them. But that's what the examination is on. It isn't about what would you do in this situation. Would you talk to this person's neighbor? Where would you go to find this information? Would you look in your local phone book? No, it'll just be asking you whether or not you were allowed to do this and whether or not you'd be fined and what the fine would be and how long, you know, just stuff, just bureaucratic stuff. If you can memorize that for a few days and you take the test, you're fine.
So you have to know the legal side of it. They're not trying to test whether you'd be a good detective.
Yeah, and that's the final part of it. If you haven't done either of the other two requirements that I just said, you know, worked with a company or what have you that provides the experience, been a police officer, been a military investigator, or worked as a sponsored intern, the last thing you can do, my understanding is take the classes. And I didn't take the classes because I did not need to. I took another route. And they're expensive. And my understanding is they don't really teach you much. I can't tell you what's in them, not only because I'm not allowed to tell you, because I don't know. I assume they teach you how to use Google because, or how to say hello to somebody, because those are the two things that I use. But I hope they teach you how to look into, you know, make public records requests, because that comes up often. But essentially, the deal with taking the courses is just paying the money to the state. I think it ends up running something like $600, $700 now. They raise it every year just because, why not? Why not slowly raise the barrier to entry, you know? Why not get more money out of you? But, yeah, so it's either do it the couple of ways that you could actually learn something, or pay some money and sit through some classes that probably don't teach you anything. Whichever way you want to go about it, then they will go through the background check process, which will take about 90 days, and they'll tell you whether or not you're allowed to work. And you can actually work during that time. They'll give you a temporary license, and then probably they'll approve you, and then you're golden. There are just things that you have to remember, like if you have to report every time you have a felony, or every time you—I think even misdemeanor—you have to report every time you're arrested or anything. You have to tell them every time you accidentally, or you have to tell them every time you discharge a firearm that isn't at a range, that sort of thing. Wonderful stuff. But
you have to tell them every time you discharge a firearm that isn't at the range. At a range. So does that mean that? Does that mean like a professional range, or just anytime you're not target shooting?
I mean, if you pull it out and have to fire on somebody.
Okay. I was like, are they just monitoring your gun use in general, or are they worried about you?
Yeah, that's sort of that kind of, it's because it's assumed that if you're a private investigator, you're probably going to get your W, which is the specific, you're going to get your concealed, and you're going to get your Class G license, which is the specific carry license that allows you to carry while on the job and specifically for the job and only for the job, which is, it's different than W, and you can have both. It's just, this is specifically for the job. And I guess they just assume that you're going to have both, but a lot of the requirements end up overlapping for each other because G is specifically the firearms license for a private investigator. So I guess they just assume that you're going to get the G. If you're in the scope of employment and you're firing a weapon, you damn well better have your G license or you're in trouble. But other than that, other than being very meticulous and reporting every single thing that happens that would cause you to be in trouble with the law, and just playing nice with all of the rules as far as furnishing all of every product of work to any client that wants any details as far as what you've done. And anytime the state wants to look through your records, letting them look through it, which barely ever happens. As long as you do all that, you're golden. You should be able to keep the license. So that's how you would get into it in Florida, and that's how you would supposedly keep it. That's basically all there is to it. That was my understanding.
Hell yeah. That definitely...
And you should look into it yourself, because I've done it differently than... I skipped some steps. I did some things that aren't entirely correct. So you can skip some steps, but you want to look into exactly how you can get it done and get it done yourself, and who will help you get it done in order to get the license. Because I may have not been entirely correct with a couple things, and I don't want to mislead you at all. The information is everywhere. If you look up FDACS, Florida Department of Agriculture and Services, basically how to become a private investigator, they'll give you like 7 PDFs on how much it's going to cost and what you're going to need to know and how to apply, that sort of thing.
And, if you're not in Florida, if you're local...
If you're not in Florida, go fuck yourself. I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, now I guess everybody outside of Florida is just on their own. Oh, wow. Yeah, this is a Florida-specific podcast today.
Yeah, like, for instance, I'm told, I don't even know this for sure, I think in Wyoming you don't need a license. I don't think so, but all states are different.
Yeah, I mean, shit, in, what is it, I think New Hampshire, you don't need car insurance, so I'm sure that would make your job a lot different.
It would. I probably wouldn't be able to work there in this capacity.
I forget what they do. You have to have, like, a bank account with so many thousands of dollars, like, set aside. So that way, if you get in an accident... But the thing is if you, like... The cool advantage, from my understanding, is if you, get rid of that car, or you're no longer driving it, or whatever, and you no longer need to have it, quote-unquote, insured... You just don't need, you can take that money out that bank account and you have that still.
Well, that would make things a lot different because, at least for my job, I don't know, did you want me to get into any of the monetary stuff? Does that matter?
Yeah, sure.
I'll just briefly explain, whatever money you are going to have set aside 2, 3, 5 thousand, that's a lot of money for me. That kind of money is not going to cover some of these bodily injuries. Like, the bare minimum insurance coverage in Florida is $10,000 personal injury protection, which is you're required to have, supposedly required to have, and not just pay the premium and then keep it in your car and not tell anybody.
To be honest, I'm probably far, like, underplaying how much you have to have set aside. Like, I just know it was a certain amount.
Right, and what I mean is your bodily injuries are going to way.
Like, it might be, like, $10,000 or some shit, I forget.
Yeah, and your medical expenses could be $300,000 or what have you.
Yeah.
So, I think it'd be a lot different there just because the pay wouldn't be... You probably wouldn't have a livable wage there just because there wouldn't be a high enough payout to pay anybody who got injured. But I don't know that area. There could be something I'm missing. You've just introduced this knowledge to me, so...
Yeah, and I have a very rudimentary, like, idea of their law at best. I am not any sort of expert. That is just my passing knowledge and understanding of it. So, yeah. Anyways, is there any final words you would like to share with our audience? Or anything that you wish to turn our audience on to?
Well, usually at the end of a recording, I ask if it's okay to be recording today because I'm required to ask. Florida's a two-party state, so that's what I would usually say at the end of one of these. otherwise, yeah, right. But... What to look into? I suppose look into getting the license yourself if you can, just because, it's just a tool that you could have. But otherwise, look into, you can find the information online as far as open source intelligence, as far as how to do this yourself, and... Oh, okay. The one thing I forgot to mention is if you actually wanted to be a private investigator for some reason, one thing you could look into is speaking to other private investigators that you can find around, because sometimes it's not great work, but they'll point you in directions of persons, usually attorneys, that need work, and they usually won't pay on time, but sometimes they'll pay, so you'll be able to at least find work. So you'll be able to discuss with other investigators what work they don't want to do, and maybe you'll be able to get your foot in the door with somebody. Usually it doesn't work out, but sometimes it works out, and then maybe you'll make a client for a while. I didn't say that you can act without a license. Obviously, you can't. You know, I'm not allowed to tell you that without a license, but, you know, there's ways to find out information on people that's open source, and you don't have to have a license to look into, at least. And you don't have to license to check out somebody's Facebook, and you don't have to... There's no law against buying your cell phone from a guy who has a bag of cell phones that this person bought from a Metro PCS somewhere in Indiana. There's no law against that. That's the sort of thing. There's a possibility that you get your insurance and you just pay the binder, and maybe you forget to pay anything but the binder, and you keep the card in your car because the cops never call the insurance company. They just take it down, you know, that sort of thing. But, of course, it does hurt the other person involved in Florida. But that's a thing that does happen.
Damn. Yeah, so that's... Pretty interesting. I've definitely learned a lot this interview, and this has been extremely educational, and now I definitely see a beautiful role that private detectives can help play in our transition to a more just justice system, so... Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and experience with us.
No problem, Logan. I am glad to be of service.
And for those in the audience unaware, Anne is one of the Green Market Agoras podcast patrons. So if you would also like to become a patron and support this podcast... And join the likes of Anne, Cameron Wright, and Jason, then come sign up as a patron. Link in the description. You can also send one-time donations via PayPal or any pretty much any form of cryptocurrency through coin payments. all the links in the descriptions. Go check out our merch store. All that fun jazz. Go get you a free ounce of Kratom. Oh yeah, and one last thing. We do host this podcast on Anchor.fm, which is owned by Spotify, which recently patented some very concerning spyware technology, which they claim to have not implemented yet, but a bunch of artists on the platform, artists and other creators, have teamed up to start the Stop Spotify Surveillance campaign. So please check out stopspotifysurveillance.org for more details. And there will be a link in the description. Sign that petition. See how you can help out. And love y'all and have a great one.
See ya.
We live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable. So did the divine right of kings.
Once consent was manufactured, now it's harvested for clicks. Algorithms make decisions, filter bubbles make us sick. We're all connected to machines, paid every second, but we just can't look away. We all wanna be seen, but behind the screen there's a nightmare dressed up as a dream, and we can't wake up.
Private company.
Charted, processed, optimized.
Senator, we run out.
Eye movements, facial expressions. Manipulation, monetized. We're all connected to machines. Paid every second, but we just can't look away. We all wanna be seen, but behind the screen there's a nightmare dressed up as a dream, and we can't wake up.
There's a difference between knowing something and doing something about it. We assume that there should be a prison system, there should be a surveillance apparatus. I think that these assumptions need to be questioned.
An infinite playground, a library, human creativity. They paved it over, put up walls. Now it's billboards, big bugs, shopping malls. Paid every second, but we just can't look away. We all wanna be seen, but behind the screen there's a nightmare dressed up as a dream, and we can't wake up.
Neither math nor machines can extract 4 centuries of white supremacy.
And we can't wake up.
Neither math nor machines can extract 4 centuries of white supremacy from American policing. Simply inserting digital technologies into discriminatory policing without addressing its fundamental flaws can only serve to supersize that discrimination, can only serve to reduce community safety, and can only violate the civil rights of the most vulnerable among us. Nothing else can happen.
Oh yeah, and I did almost forget one last thing. We are an Anchor. Oh, yeah, and I did almost forget one last thing. We do host this podcast on anchor.fm, which is owned by Spotify, which... Bye.